is 1A on Todd's Willick in Washington. In 1974, she was a young congressional staffer helping the House Judiciary Committee draft impeachment charges against President Richard Nixon. In 1998, she was a member of the House Judiciary Committee when it approved articles of impeachment against President Bill Clinton. Now, she's been selected by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to prosecute the impeachment case against President Donald Trump in front of the Senate. Zoe Lofgren is an impeachment manager. She represents the 19th District of California, and she's with us now for a special podcast edition of 1A. Congresswoman Lofgren, thanks for being here.
You bet.
Congresswoman Lofgren, take me back in time a little bit. What do you remember about the conversations and the calculations that nearly led to impeachment back in 1974?
Well, I was a lot younger then. I was actually a law student, and I was working on the staff of Congressman Don Edwards, a member of the Judiciary Committee. I'd been on his staff for a number of years, and I was not in charge of anything. I was just a law student, but I had an opportunity to observe. And in the end, ended up writing one of the articles that the lawyers didn't want to write. What I remember is watching the impact of the evidence on the members of the committee. It started out, and obviously the Republican members were very loyal to their president. And although the Democrats weren't big fans of Nixon, it wasn't as if there weren't some things he was doing that they liked. But as the evidence rolled out, it became clear to a majority of the members of the committee that it was behavior that could not be countenanced, that it threatened the constitutional order, and that the Congress needed to act. And it was interesting to watch the members who started out defending the president, some earlier changed their view. And in the end, some members, it really was at the very end when Nixon basically admitted everything that they had to say, this just cannot be allowed to continue.
Well, that is interesting, because when you watch politics, and even sometimes when you cover it, you can get the sense that the decisions are pre-baked and everything that takes place in a committee or on camera is kind of pro forma for the public. But you're saying in this case, you watched minds being changed.
Absolutely. And, you know, I wasn't allowed to listen. But the members of the committee and some of the staff, I remember they would go into the committee room and they had these big clunky headphones, and they would listen hour after hour after hour to the tapes, the Nixon tapes. And it was not an uplifting experience. And then as time went on and the more damaging tapes were ordered released, and then admissions began, it really just became untenable. I mean, you just can't have behavior like this.
Did you watch any minds get changed in 1999 when you were on the Judiciary Committee for Bill Clinton's impeachment?
I didn't, and I think there's an underlying reason why. Impeachment in the Constitution is a remedy for presidential misuse of power, misuse of presidential power. And if you go back to really the origins of impeachment in England, and what the founding fathers thought they were doing when they drafted the Constitution, it's about threats to the state. As a matter of fact, the original provision in the Constitution was treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors against the state. And there was a style committee that actually made various style changes, but they were not to change the meaning. Against the state was removed because it was so obvious. Well, what Clinton did was immoral and illegal, but lying about a sexual affair is not misuse of presidential powers. Any husband caught in an affair could lie about the affair. It wasn't misuse of presidential powers to upend the constitutional order. And so even though the facts were clear, it didn't constitute a high crime or misdemeanor. And that's why, you know, going through the facts couldn't change the outcome.
How do you think the media impacts the decisions made behind the scenes today about how to handle a witness who's testifying in front of the committee on television or how to roll out new evidence? It must be very different than it was in 1974 or even 1999.
Well, it's interesting because most television played a key role in 74, not so much in the House side, but you'll recall the Senate with Sam Ervin had the initial Watergate hearings, and that really had explosive testimony, and it was riveting television. It really galvanized the American public. You remember when John Dean said that he had told that there was a cancer on the presidency, and when we first learned that there was a tape system in the White House, all of that happened on TV in the Senate. A lot of the depositions, when it came to the Judiciary Committee, were done privately, and you know there was some public testimony as well. But the TV role played a key role in 74. Well, it was 73 in the Watergate hearings. In the case of the Clinton impeachment, you know, I really didn't think that the coverage of the committee itself had much of an impact. What was inflammatory was the lurid nature of the allegations that the president had engaged in an affair with this young woman who had been an intern in the office. And it was, you know, not an uplifting thing to hear about. I don't know that it made any impact on the witnesses called before us. In fact, the only witnesses were really the lawyers, constitutional scholars, and Ken Starr himself to present the report.
More after the break on 1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor LegalZoom. It's easy to make the same old New Year's resolutions that won't stick, so change it up this year. Use LegalZoom to do something impactful in your life. For over 19 years, LegalZoom has helped more than 4 million people, providing resources for resolving your personal and business legal needs. LegalZoom isn't a law firm, so you can count on their network of independent attorneys for advice. More information is available at LegalZoom.com/NPR.
Now, today you have wall-to-wall cable 24-hour news coverage that's geared toward drama. Of course, you have the internet and social media, which didn't exist in either of the previous two cases. The media environment is different. Have you seen behind the scenes how it affects how your colleagues approach witnesses or how people discuss how to roll out a witness or evidence or a strategy?
Well, on the House side, we have, I don't want to be negative about individually named people, but there are different styles on the committee. And on just talking about the Republican side for a moment, there are some of our members who tend to be very volatile. And I think they were rewarded with that volatility through going viral on the various platforms and raising money through internet approaches. That was not present in prior impeachments. So I do think the reward of really outrageous conduct among members is a new thing and not a welcome development. Because this is serious. This is about the Constitution. This is about whether our country is going to have a successful democracy on into the future. It shouldn't be cause for fundraising.
I would say also that the reward maybe for rolling out screenshots of Lev Parnas's text messages had a bigger impact now than it might have 10, 20 years ago.
That's also true. You know, if you witnesses can you know, answer cleverly, but the documents really don't lie. And so if you have really compelling documentary evidence or documentary evidence that seems to support a verbal testimony or commentary, it's very compelling. It used to be that certainly in the Nixon impeachment, there were three TV channels and everybody got the same news. In the Clinton impeachment, there was more variation. There was cable, but it wasn't as it is today. And the internet basically was not a factor. Now there's you know, thousands of different takes and media sources. And we segmented ourselves, not just on impeachment, but as a society, it's possible to have a different reality than your neighbors based on your news source. It's extraordinary, really.
Congresswoman, do you think the House moved too quickly on impeachment and too narrowly? This is not a new debate, but now that impeachment has gone to the Senate, a lot of people, and I know a lot of your colleagues, thought, why rush it? The scope of presidential misconduct could enter into emoluments. It could enter into personal financial dealings. It could enter into so many other areas, payoffs or illegal campaign activities. Why go so quickly and focus narrowly on Ukraine? Do you think that was a mistake?
I don't. You know, the president has engaged in a pattern of obstruction that has never before happened in the history of the United States. If you read his lawyer's letter, Mr. Cipollini's six-page rant to the House, it basically said, you get nothing. It didn't assert a privilege that could be litigated. It's like, nobody's going to testify, and you get no information, no documents, because we don't like what you're doing, basically. Well, you can litigate that, but that takes a while. For example, the McGahn matter, the House Judiciary Committee went to court to compel Mr. McGahn to testify. You'll recall John Dean was President Nixon's lawyer. He went over and testified on the Nixon matter. Well, we have yet to have that was initiated last spring. We don't have a final answer on that yet, and probably won't until maybe next year. So there comes a point where you have to see, what do you have? Do you have sufficient and compelling direct evidence that compels you to act? And we did. There were a number of witnesses who defied the president's order not to appear, and they gave compelling firsthand evidence about his misconduct. There's a lot of other information we would like to have had, but we had what we had, and it was sufficient to vote articles of impeachment.
So what's your role in this impeachment trial on the Senate floor? Different managers will have different roles. What's yours?
Well, we're going to act as a team. I'm not going to get into that at this point. We're working together over the weekend, reading the trial briefs, and we will be ready, each of us hopefully playing the role that best suits us and helps the senators find the truth so they can do impartial justice as they vowed to do.
Well, without tipping your hand, because I suspect you won't want to, can you take us inside the spirit of the conversations that are taking place between you and other impeachment managers and lawyers and staff?
Not really. I mean, we all know each other. Five of the seven served on the Judiciary Committee during the impeachment, so we've been through this once already. And certainly, Mr. Crow is a freshman member, but certainly he brings a tremendous trial experience as well as national security experience. So we'll work together as a team, and I hope hopefully successfully.
Congresswoman, if the Senate is going to hear from witnesses maybe toward the back end of the trial, it will likely be at the urging of the House managers. Do you think you'll want to hear from Lev Parnas personally to tell what he knows, or just rely on the texts and the phone information already in the House's possession?
It's too early to answer that. We need, as you know, during the Clinton impeachment, there were time limits in place. The managers had 24 hours. President Clinton had 24 hours to respond. Then there was a time to have questions. Then there were witnesses. And so we need to see, given the time, who would be the most pertinent witnesses? And that's not a call that can be made right now.
What do you think will inform that decision in the end? Will it be your sense of public opinion? Will it be the sense of whether there are enough Republican senators who might waver? What tips that decision?
I think it's the real issue is, what do we need to do to make the truth clear to the Senate and the American public? And you know, you could call 50 witnesses. That's not going to happen. So the question is, which of the available potential witnesses would most help us reveal the truth to the Senate. The documents are also extraordinarily important. As I mentioned, you know, witnesses can be clever in their answers. The documents don't lie.
We'll be back in a moment. I'm Todd Zwillick. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, BetterHelp, the online counseling service dedicated to connecting you with a licensed counselor to help you overcome whatever stands in the way of your happiness. Fill out a questionnaire and get matched with a professional tailored to your needs. And if you aren't satisfied with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time, free of charge. Visit BetterHelp.com/1A to get 10% off your first month. Get the help you deserve with BetterHelp.
Well, leading up to the trial, President Trump started beefing up his legal team in the days before the trial really got going. What do you glean from the team that he chose? Let's focus maybe on Ken Starr and Alan Dershowitz especially.
I don't really have an opinion. I mean, the president is entitled to the legal defense team that he has confidence in. I presume he does have confidence in his team, and we will see them on the Senate floor on Tuesday.
What about claims of executive privilege? A lot of people have pointed toward former National Security Advisor John Bolton. He says he'd like to testify. He says he would if subpoenaed. He's widely thought to be a fact witness and an eyewitness to the president's behavior. But isn't it possible he could testify if you all get him called and could claim privilege on the things you really need to know?
I think the idea that the president can keep from the Congress testimony or the truth while he is facing his own removal from office is an extraordinarily wrong-headed proposition. The Congress has the sole authority to impeach and to try. The president has no constitutional capacity to interfere in that obligation.
Well, Congresswoman, a conviction, according to everyone watching this trial and probably according to your congressional colleagues, is very unlikely in this case. Just not enough Republicans to get to 2/3 of the Senate. Given that, what are you looking to get out of this trial? Barring removal, in your view, what is the best outcome here?
Well, I think the president should be convicted and removed. I think the case has been made. We hope to provide a very clear picture to the Senate and to the American people of the nature of the president's misconduct, the way that it violates the Constitution, and the threat that it poses to the constitutional order. Only the senators can decide whether to convict. So, all my job is to present the information to them. I do think that just the information being present is a helpful thing. I think it presumably and hopefully will encourage the president to stop his misconduct. He's already been impeached. He has that stain that cannot be erased. And I think it also is a warning to future presidents not to engage in misconduct that undercuts the constitutional order.
Well, the documents are the documents. You've said that. Do you, from what you've seen, think that Lev Parnas is a credible witness? Is he somebody, if you had the opportunity as a lawyer, you think you might want to have testify for your case?
Well, he's given extraordinary interviews on TV, and there's certainly documents that tend to give credibility to some of what he has said. So that's very interesting, I think, to the public and presumably to the Senate. But it really just confirms the case that was already made by the House on the misconduct that the president engaged in to try and force the Ukrainian government to interfere in our election.
Of course, a media interview is not testimony under oath.
That's correct.
Two different things. Look, John Bolton is no political friend of Zoe Lofgren, that's for sure.
Is correct.
If he were called, would you trust him to give the full truth? I'm not asking you to doubt his veracity, but he might have political motives to not help your case.
He may very well. The point is that when witnesses appear, they take an oath, and to lie under oath is perjury. So I don't know if he'll be a witness or not, but I presume that witnesses who take an oath will take that oath seriously.
Well, this is, of course, a trial. It is also partly a political process. It is the House and the Senate, after all. Barring removal, which I know is what you think is just here, but barring that, what do you want the political benefit to be? Do you want the president's corruption displayed for the voting public so that they know not to vote for him again?
I want the outcome I would like first is that he should be convicted and removed. But the main thing is we want behavior that undercuts the Constitution to stop on the part of this president and any future president. And the election is separate. That, you know, we'll, I don't know who are, the candidates are going to be. That's a separate matter. This is about the Constitution, and we need to keep that in mind.
Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren is from the 19th District in California, and she is an impeachment manager for the House in front of the Senate. Congresswoman, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Good talking to you.
This conversation was produced by Emmanuel Johnson, and our podcast is edited by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, go to the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington. It's distributed by NPR. I'm Todd Zwillick. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.